This is the House of Hockey podcast on the Hockey Podcast Network. Hockey is more than a game. It's a lifestyle. It's you, the diehard supportive fans, your favorite players who are on the team you cheer for and the organization who supports them.
The companies that make your gear, bags, and beer league sweaters. The hockey moms and hockey dads and everything else that makes this House of Hockey your home. Come on in. I'm Breezy.
And I'm Ray Ray.
And this is our house. So you've heard us talk about DraftKings, the leader in fantasy sports, and how payday can come every day by entering their contest with huge cash prizes up for grabs. This week is jam-packed with action ranging from basketball to golf, and DraftKings has plenty of ways for you to have a front row seat of all of the action. Making a lineup on DraftKings adds excitement to every game and is simple to do. Draft your lineup and feel the sweat like never before. Every moment means more with a DraftKings lineup on the line. DraftKings has paid over $7 billion to users across all sports, and DraftKings is the leader in daily sports fantasy, so there is no better place to get in on all of the action. Now that you know how to play, download the DraftKings app and sign up using the code THPN, that stands for the Hockey Podcast Network. New users will get a free entry with their first deposit. That's code THPN to get a free entry with your first deposit. Only at DraftKings, a minimum $5 deposit is required. Eligibility restrictions apply, and see DraftKings.com for details. And make sure to stay tuned for later in this episode, and we talk about how I love playing fantasy hockey and the luck that I get.
And how you crush it and win all the time.
Sometimes. Most of the time. What's up, guys? You are listening to the House of Hockey podcast. I am your host, Breezy.
And I'm your other host, Ray Ray. And it's episode 50, 5-0.
Pew, 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 pew.
Which
is, we know what that was.
Which is super fitting that this is our 50th episode, because we're recording this on Saturday before the episode drops on Tuesday. And on this day in history, Sidney Crosby is playing his 1,000th hockey game. And I feel like it's only fitting that our fates are tied, Sidney's and ours, because as you all know, if you listen to the show, our final three questions, we always ask our guests if they have a Sidney Crosby story. And now we have another Sidney Crosby story that our 50th episode was recorded the same day he played his 1,000th game.
And speaking of Sidney Crosby, this was not set up at all, by the way. I kind of have an unpopular opinion having to do with Sidney Crosby.
Oh, dude, go for it.
Because all over the internet, you just see like all these things on like, should Sidney Crosby be traded and whatnot. And I read a comment this morning, like right before we went on, we started recording this. And some girl said, exactly the way I feel. I would rather lose to Sidney Crosby on the Penguins than to see him in another person, like another team sweater. How do you feel? Would it be weird to see him on another team?
Yes. I think Sidney should forever be a Penguin. I don't think he should ever leave. I don't even think he will. He's not going to pull like a Henrik Lundqvist or a Zdeno Chara and like go somewhere else. I really do think that he will stay forever. Absolutely. A Penguin, especially with his relationship with Lemieux and like just, you know, him being, you know, running the team and Sidney being such a big part of it. I mean, like Sidney has a 12-year contract with the Penguins that doesn't come up until 24-25. Like, when is that? What are those days? What is that year I just said? 2024? Like, you know.
I don't even know if we're going to make it that far.
I know. I agree with you. I think he will forever stay a penguin, and I would rather lose to him as a penguin. And I respect that of him. I also respect guys who need to leave and try something else and want to continue to play. But I just think from all the stories we've heard about Sidney's character, this makes the most sense for him would be to stay. And I love that people just like try to make up stories on the internet of like, oh, he's gonna be traded. Do you think he'd ever leave? Like, and you know what? Who cares if he does? So what if he does? He can do whatever he wants. He's Sidney fucking Crosby.
Too
You
funny.
know? He's
Well,
playing 1,000 games today. Like a 1,000 games.
that's a lot of games. Well, our guest this week
Oh yeah, we didn't even do that.
also has a story on Sid and how great he is. And although we are not a Sidney Crosby podcast, we just happen to talk about him a lot. And this guy, our guest that we have on is Brandon, or sorry, we got to rewind that. We got to take that out. Is Brendan Batchelor, who is the play-by-play voice of the Vancouver Canucks. He joined us. He obviously has announced Sid's name multiple times. And yeah, so he's our guest this week.
Yeah, he does play-by-play for Sportsnet 650, and he also has his own podcast that also airs on the radio there, Hockey Fight Pod, that he does with a comedian friend of his whose name is escaping me, but you'll hear about that in the interview. And you know, we don't just talk about Canucks, so don't be like, ugh, I don't want to listen to this. It's not all about
You're acting like the Canucks are the worst thing to talk about.
yeah. Well, you
They're
know, just in
not.
case. No, they're not. But you know, if somebody's like, "Oh, I hate the Canucks," like, don't worry because we don't talk about like in depth about the team. We do ask him for his opinion on their season thus far and what they need to improve upon and sort of the pulse of this the city and how they feel about the team. But he talks a lot about how he got into being a broadcaster and what it's really like to do play by play. And he offered a really unique opinion about being doing hockey play by play and how it's actually easier than a lot of other sports because you're not filling airtime like you are in baseball. But yeah, he's got some good stories too, and I think you guys will enjoy it.
Absolutely. I know we enjoyed it, and it was able to bring back some memories for me, because my first away game other than my home arena was in Vancouver. So it was kind of really cool to relive that a little bit there. So I miss Vancouver. You've never been to Vancouver because you've never been to Canada. I just remember that.
Exactly. I know.
So now
Everybody's going, that's unacceptable. But it will happen when the borders are open and things are easier. But yeah.
Well,
That's happening. Speaking of things that we are always learning about each other, like how I've never been to Canada, you play NHL Fantasy?
do.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah, fantasy
Fan
hockey, yeah.
fantasy hockey. I was like, wait a second, that doesn't sound right.
I do.
Fantasy hockey?
Yeah, I do.
And you've been
That's
doing
like,
this like forever, and I didn't
yeah.
know, and you're also super good at it.
I try to be super good at it.
Didn't you
I
tell
mean,
me
I
you were like the
don't.
champion every year for like 4 years?
Yeah, I did.
Guys, that means she's super good at it.
Yeah, but it's not like I'm playing like against like these all stars or whatever. Like they're just like friends and friends of friends and whatnot. But usually we, yeah. I usually am in a few of them per season, so I have like five different rosters I'm trying to move around between different groups. But yeah, I'm number one,
Five.
and yeah, I'm really dedicated. I think it's so fun. I mean, you can draft your own team. Like I think that's why I know like more about like players, like in depth on certain things. Just because I watch so many games because I'm like, well, this sucks because I really don't want this team to win, but this guy's on my roster and I really need him to do good. So it's funny. I think that's what makes the sport fun. And when you're able to do, fantasy for whatever sport you're into, I feel like you just pay more attention to certain things that maybe other people don't. But as of right now, I am number one in my league. It is awesome. I feel so good. And I did the math today and I'm not up by much, but there is, drum roll, 59 points between me and the second person.
That's a lot.
59. You know who also is 59? Roman Yossi.
It's a sign of good things to come.
It's a sign. Anywho.
I think that's really admirable that you can handle not just one fantasy league, but five fantasy leagues. You have to do that every fucking day. For people who don't play fantasy, you have to change your roster every day, right? Because of the different games and the different teams, and if they're not playing.
Yeah, I mean, hockey is probably the most in-depth one because there's games playing at all times. Hockey's the only one that I do. I tried doing baseball one time, but it just didn't work out for me, and I'm not a football fan. I'm not in five now, currently. I'm only in one. But yeah, I mean, when you get yourself into a fantasy like that, I mean, you have to dedicate yourself. I wake up 10 minutes extra in the morning, so I have time to do my roster and make sure I do my social posts for the day, and then I'm done, and then I'm good. And you got to, and like Saturdays and Sundays suck because you can't sleep in because games could start as early as 10 a.m. my time.
Right.
So I can't sleep in. Not that I would sleep until 10, but still, what it, you know how irritating it is when you're like, I didn't change my roster and I'm screwed. These guys aren't going to score. I'm going to lose points and I'm going to look like a loser because people are like, why are you playing that guy?
Right. I mean, you might as well not play. Like if you're not committed.
Right.
Like you have to commit. And yeah, you got to do it, or else it's just a waste of time and energy and money.
Right. And you connect with other people, too, because it's like sometimes you do a live draft where, like, everyone gets together virtually for the most part. The people that I'm playing with, they're actually in Boston area, which weird. But, yeah, so they had to do it. I think they did it at, like, 9 o'clock their time. It was 6 o'clock my time. I got to pick my team. I had the number one draft pick, so obviously I got Connor McDavid. It was awesome. They tried juking me, saying that he was injured. He was going to be out for 3 weeks. But guess what? He wasn't. And I swooped him, and they're paying for it. So can't juke a jukester.
No, you can't. I mean, I commend you for your commitment to it. I used to, back in the day, I used to play fantasy football. And I was just like, this is stressing me out. Like, I don't know who this guy is on this other football team. I don't know anything about this league, like in depth about the players, rather. I guess I should rephrase that. I don't know enough about the individual players where I was like, this is a fucking waste. I'm not doing this. And it would just stress me out because I would be like, who do I put in and like which kicker and who are they playing? And I did not have any joy in it. And I would be a total spaz if I tried to play fantasy hockey. Like it's just not meant for my anxiety ridden type A brain. Like I just can't do it.
You'd be really mad that you couldn't have your entire roster be Chicago Blackhawks.
Well, that too. Yeah, that too. It would just be like, I can't, how could I pick, you know, how could I have, you know, like a Detroit Red Wing up? Like, I couldn't have Ryan O'Reilly on my team. He's a St. Louis Blue. Like,
you'd
you know.
Be like, why do you have Patrick Kane? Patrick Kane's my guy.
Exactly.
You can't have a...
I'd be like doing like trade deals on the side, but like then
you're trading your entire roster just to get one guy.
Exactly.
Your mind is blown.
We have to talk about what do you think the Penguins are going to get Sidney Crosby for his 1,000th game? Like the team has to like buy him something.
What do you buy Sidney Crosby?
Like people, like they buy them Rolexes and like...
I don't think he's a Rolex kind of guy. I feel like they would do...
He'd probably donate it to charity, whatever they bought him. Because he's just like that guy. Don't you think? Not you know, that that's a I bad like, thing.
I feel like they will get him a vacation in the off season. They're going to pay for him to go on like a week-long vacation with his girlfriend. Mm-hmm. All-inclusive night in Mexico.
What would you want for your 1,000th game? Like if we played in the NHL.
God, I don't know.
I would want like I would want some big ass diamond stud earrings.
Oh.
and like maybe a matching big, like I'm talking like big, like 10 carats. I don't know if they make that, but like maybe 5 carats per ear. Like I want like big, and then I want like a really big like pinky ring
I could see it right
that's
now. I'm just gonna Photoshop you with just like these like glacier size
Yes.
earrings on. You're gonna look like me. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, exactly. That with diamonds.
Yeah, that with diamonds.
And like a diamond pinky, like a pimp pinky ring with
Oh, a pimp peaky.
like
Oh.
if it said like 1,000, or if it was like Ray or my initials, like
So basically, you want like a Super Bowl ring for your pinky.
yes. Yeah. Yeah, I don't
Super
wear
pinky.
watches. I don't want a Rolex. Pfft, that's a waste. I'm like not into the watch game, so and like I would like no. I would have
Okay.
way more opportunities to wear the ring on like a daily basis,
Yeah.
and then the diamond earrings, for those special moments. What about you?
I'm just gonna keep it short and sweet. Give me my own private plane.
I think that's like a little more than a team could afford to buy a
Knows?
private plane.
You know, it's okay. You said I can get anything I want for my 1,000th game.
I
And I'm telling
did.
you, I'm gonna do a private jet.
Am I invited to come on trips with you? Are
Absolutely.
me and my 10 carats of diamonds coming on the
I
plane?
don't know. They might have to be flown in separately. It might be a little heavy.
But I have to have security come on the plane just to guard the earrings and the ring.
Yeah, you're gonna be like Kim Kardashian. My earring.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Did you hear their
Heard?
Kanye and Kim are
Yeah.
getting divorced?
But the better news is that Kourtney Kardashian and Travis Barker are officially a couple. So
That's
exciting.
so bizarre to me.
It is bizarre, but it's whatever.
I
Travis is
know.
awesome. I love the guy.
I
Good dude.
saw a picture of them and I was like, now that's an odd couple. And sometimes odd couples work. It's definitely a little judgmental of me, but isn't
That's
that what
okay.
celebrity gossip is for? To be a little judgmental?
Exactly.
Or are we
That's fair.
supposed to be like nice about it?
I mean, it's not like you're gonna like run into them.
I mean, even if I did, I would be like, Courtney, please explain this dynamic because you guys look very opposite. I would love to know what
She
makes you guys
goes,
tick.
and then she's like, so, yeah.
Exactly. And then she would eat a salad because that's all they do in the
Yeah.
Kardashians.
Yeah.
Just like eat salads.
Just, yeah.
Yeah. Let's toss it on over to our guest for this episode. He is the voice of the Vancouver Canucks play-by-play for Sportsnet 650. And he's also one of the hosts of the Hockey Fight podcast, Brendan Batchelor. He has been a play-by-play broadcaster with over a decade of experience in the industry. He's called more than 600 games. He's called games in the WHL as well as the Vancouver Canucks, obviously. He has called the 2020 Stanley Cup final on Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. And let's let him tell the rest of his story. Enjoy.
Well, let's just jump into it. So tell everyone who you are and how you got started into basically the job you have now.
Yeah, I'm Brendan Batchelor. I'm the radio play-by-play voice for the Vancouver Canucks on Sportsnet 650 Radio in Vancouver. And play-by-play is something that I've kind of always wanted to do since I was a little kid, but I didn't realize it when I was a little kid. So, I would do the play-by-play of my street hockey games, of my table hockey set, of my NHL video games. I would mute the TV when games were on and do play-by-play. And, when I was a kid, it was sort of just make believe, imagination, pretend you're a broadcaster. And then when I was coming out of high school, I was like, you know what? That would be pretty cool to get paid to talk about sports and talk about hockey. So I went to school for broadcast journalism at the British Columbia Institute of Technology here in Vancouver, and started in the industry at Team 1040 Radio just as a producer, and worked my way up through the ranks doing play-by-play for a couple of different junior teams. And then I guess it's about 3.5 years ago, I got the opportunity to interview to call games in the NHL for the Vancouver Canucks, and the rest is history.
That's incredible.
Yeah, that's awesome. Tell us a little bit more about your journey, you know, in the minor system, working your way up. You know, tell everybody where they may have heard you, or, you know, run through sort of your resume, if you will, to give people some other background.
Yeah, so I started as the play-by-play announcer of the Surrey Eagles, who play in the BCHL, so Junior A hockey. And that league is well known for being a really good feeder system for NCAA teams. So players that play in that league often, you know, the top end guys go on to earn scholarships, and some of them make the NHL. Guys like Kyle Turris and Devon Taves and many others have come out of the BCHL and gone on to college hockey. So I had been working at the radio station doing part-time production work, a little bit of reporting here and there, always sort of having my eye on getting into play-by-play whenever I could. And the opportunity with that team came up. So I applied and got the job to do their play-by-play. And it was one of the best seasons I've ever had in hockey. My first year of play-by-play, they won the BCHL championship. They went all the way to the national championship semifinal and lost in double overtime. So I got to travel across the country and call games covering that team, which, you know, Devon Taves was on that team. So I've known him since he was a teenager. There are a number of other guys that have gone on to play pro hockey at various other levels that were on that team. So that was a lot of fun. And then coming out of that season, I was hired by the Vancouver Giants of the Western Hockey League, which is the top level of junior hockey in Canada, and called games there for 4 years before I got the opportunity to make the jump to the NHL.
So what's like a day in the life for you? I guess it would be for when you do have to call a game.
Yeah, well, my life is a bit different right now, and it's why I have this very basic setup here. I'm essentially talking to you guys from like my house's equivalent of Harry Potter's cupboard under the stairs. Because I guess it's just over a week ago now, I was exposed to someone who tested positive for COVID. Mm. And so as a result, in Canada, you're required to self-isolate for 14 days.
They come to your house there.
Well, they haven't, but
they know where you live, and they come knock on your door. A friend of mine lives in Toronto, and she's like, they came and knocked on our door. I'm like, oh, yeah, sorry.
So I haven't had anyone knocking on my door to this point, but normally I've got like an office that I would do something like this in, but my wife and I are self-isolating in different parts of the house just to be precautious. So I get the cupboard under the stairs instead in terms of where I can get set up and do something like this. So days right now are very different because while I can't call the games, I'm helping out on the pregame show, the intermission, and the postgame show. So that's different for me. In terms of a regular day for play-by-play, pre-COVID, it's a lot different than during COVID. But, you know, a typical home game, I would go down to the rink for about 9:30, 10 in the morning. And, you know, before COVID, go into the media room and grab a coffee and chat with some other members of the media and go and watch the team's morning skate, which usually the home team usually skates around 10:30. And that's where you can generally see their line rushes. So who's going to be in the lineup that night, who may not be playing, and figure out any other sort of talking points that that may develop heading into the game that night. And then after the morning skate, again, pre-COVID, we would go down into the dressing room and have a chance to interview players or talk to guys off the record to get background information on things we might want to mention in the broadcast. In COVID, that looks very different. We still go to the rink, still watch the morning skate, but we have to watch it from way up in the upper bowl in a specific area. Everybody has to be, you know, 6 feet apart. Everybody has to wear masks. And then we do all the interviews on Zoom, press conference style. But pre-COVID, you know, you go in, I do a one-on-one interview with a player that airs on our pregame show. And then I do a one-on-one interview with Canucks head coach Travis Green that airs on our pregame show. So I still do that interview, albeit remotely and right now in the cupboard under the stairs with Travis over the phone. But you know what? We have to be adaptable in the pandemic. So we find a way to get things done. So that's generally the morning. And then in so do the interview with him, do all the, you know, the interviews, and then if I get a chance, watch the visiting team go through their morning skate, talk to some of their media that generally will have traveled into Vancouver to learn any sort of insight on that team that I may not have been aware of, as opposed to being, you know, acutely aware of what's happening with the Canucks, you know, watching them every game. And then the afternoon, I would either come home or go to the office and just finish up my personal prep for the broadcast. So, you know, any interesting statistics or trends or things that I think are worth mentioning on the broadcast that night, and then show up back at the rink around 5 o'clock. And Corey Hirsch, who's a former NHL goaltender, is my color analyst. So we'll sit down and talk about some of the storylines we want to mention in the broadcast and what our keys to the game are going to be and things like that. And then we do a hit on the pregame show at 6 o'clock, and we call the game at 7. And then I'm home at about 11:30. So, you know, pre-COVID, that's what it looks like. In COVID, for the home games, we're still able to go to the rink and call the games from the broadcast booth, but again, socially distanced with plexiglass in between us. And then for the away games, because media, generally speaking, aren't traveling, we call those games from a studio off monitors in Vancouver.
Now, before COVID, did you travel with the team for away games?
Yes. So we, as the rights holding broadcasters, we travel on the team charter with the team. So, you know, we've got pretty good access there where we're in the team hotel. And so on the road, it's pretty similar in terms of the actual routine. It's just you're leaving a hotel room and going to a different rink. But otherwise, it's relatively the same. And then oftentimes flying out after the game to another city and getting in, you know, 2-3 in the morning or something like that.
Oh, boy. Well, I have to say, doing play-by-play, I have never attempted to do that, like even just for fun or as a kid. But it's really hard. Like, I think that's a really hard job to do, because, like, if anybody listening ever actually tried to do that with a game on mute and were like, you're trying to be one step ahead, your brain has to work. It's like you're using both sides of your brain at the same time. So I think it's one of the harder jobs to do, because hockey moves just so fast that, like, how does your mind work? Like, how does that process work for you?
So for me, I've heard people say that they think hockey play-by-play would be difficult. And for whatever reason, I think it's the exact opposite.
I should stick to my job and you should stick to yours.
Well, so let me explain why. So, you know, your job as a play-by-play broadcaster, no matter what sport you're commentating, is to describe what's happening.
Right.
Well, in hockey, there's always something happening. So I don't have to fill airtime like you would in baseball, where the pitcher's waiting to release the pitch and I've got to know that his sister's brother-in-law's uncle used to play for this team in Louisiana or something like that, right?
That's a good point.
Whereas, you know, I still do a lot of prep for hockey and I still have my stats that I want to fit into the broadcast, but the game happens so fast that my job is to literally describe to you what I'm seeing, and that is like 99% of my job. Okay. Whereas baseball or football or other sports that move a little bit more slowly, soccer, certainly I've done some soccer play-by-play, and that's a very different experience to calling hockey. I find that more challenging because you have to have a lot of external prep, I guess, to fill the time when you're not describing something happening. So, you know, hockey can get frantic. It can get very fast. You know, I try to speak very quickly so that I can describe things very well and accurately. But and it may also be just, you know, growing up, having followed hockey from the age of like 4 years old, I've watched a lot of games. I had a lot of practice doing the play-by-play of my street hockey games and stuff. So it kind of feels second nature to me. And that's sort of how I look at it.
Gotcha. Does anybody or has anybody ever given you a word and said, like, put this in today's broadcast, like Spumoni, like what we had Carlin Bathe on our episode a couple back. And I guess Tyler Toffoli was given a word to say. I think that's pretty funny. I mean, has anybody ever given you a word?
Not specifically, but I have phrases that I like to try and fit in, or
such, you
know,
as
I can't think of any specific examples, to be honest. But you know, I think one of the challenges of being a play-by-play broadcaster, because especially in hockey, a lot of things happen with regularity. So, you know, puck gets dumped into the zone, puck is cleared, puck gets dumped into the zone, puck is cleared. So you don't want to just sound like a broken record. So you have to be a bit diverse in your verbiage and your description, right? So that I don't sound repetitive. Shot on net, shot on net, shot on net every time. Whereas you could say, you know, thrown to the goal, slid towards the crease, or you know, however would accurately describe a play. So the challenge for me in that regard is varying my descriptions enough that I don't sound repetitive, but not getting so flowery with words that people don't understand what I'm saying because I'm looking things up in a dictionary or a thesaurus or whatever. So that's something where I'll listen to other broadcasters, and if they have a turn of phrase that I like, I might sort of steal it and fit it in somewhere. You know, for example, as a sort of an homage to Doc Emrick, I usually try to fit a waffle boarded into a game every so often, a blocker save, oh, he waffle boards it to the corner, which I know is something that Doc is well known for. And so it's that side of it's kind of fun, but also challenging too, because you have to be really critical of your own broadcast and listen to your own broadcast, not in a way to sort of be like, oh man, I sound so great, but with a really critical ear to make sure that you're not slipping into trends or using the same term over and over again, and keep yourself fresh and always improving.
Interesting.
Very nice. Yeah.
So take us through, give us a good bus story from when you covered the WHL. You know, traveling on the bus with the team, I'm imagining, right? You weren't on a plane. You weren't on the charter like you are now. So I'm sure there has to be a pretty good bus story that is safe to air.
Yeah, let me think. Well, the bus trips in general were, they were awesome, to be honest. Like, I love being on the bus, and, you know, especially, you know, memorable trips for me are the ones where the weather was really bad and you're sort of white knuckling it and staying up all night as you're driving through the prairies or whatever it might be. I can remember a game where the Giants played in Prince George, and then we were driving to Edmonton overnight. And, you know, looking out the front of the bus, there were, you know, snowflakes that like twice the size of quarters coming down, and you couldn't see 20 feet in front of the bus. And, you know, real credit goes to the bus drivers that get junior hockey teams around safely, because there are some conditions, especially in Canada in the winter, that they have to drive through that are just unbelievably treacherous. So
have you ever come across like a moose in the road, or like, you know, or
yeah. So we drove, I can remember middle of the night, the bus driver slamming on the brakes once, and it was like a herd of elk, I think it was, that were crossing the road, and it was a snowy night. Luckily, he didn't hit any of them. But, you know, I've talked to people, you know, Lauren Mollican was one of the head coaches of the Giants while I was there, and his team hit a moose with the bus. So, you know, these are things that happen. But probably the most memorable moment for me on a bus trip was the Sochi Olympics were going on, and the gold medal game was Canada and Sweden. It was happening in the middle of the night on Pacific time. And we were driving back from Edmonton and from a game in Edmonton. I, with the help of some of the trainers, set it up. And the assistant coach hung a bed sheet across the front of the bus, not in front of the driver, but just behind him, so he could still see the road. And we had the projector that they used to do their video meetings on the road, you know, to break down power play or penalty kill or whatever. So we got the game on my computer streaming off a hotspot, and we projected it onto this big bed sheet at the front of the bus, so everybody could watch the Olympic gold medal game in the middle of the night as we were driving back.
Not many people can say that. So let's take it back to your broadcasting a bit. Is there a name that is the most challenging for you to say, or someone that you're like, oh, not this guy again?
Yeah, well, so there's one name in the NHL that I stumble over relatively often for whatever reason, is Melker Carlson, who, you know, of the San Jose Sharks, obviously. And I don't know if it's just the way it runs together, Melker Carlson, like the glottal stops there. Yeah, exactly. So I always stumble over that. There are some names that you look at and you're like, oh boy, this is going to be an adventure tonight. I can remember when I was calling games in the Western Hockey League, There was a player whose name was Jaden Halbgewax, which, you know, I say it and it doesn't sound that complex, but go and try and spell it and Google it. I believe he's a San Jose Sharks prospect as well, actually. And it's Halbgewachs or something like that. And so, you know, whenever you play a team with someone that has a challenging name, you know, I would talk to the other broadcaster. How do you say it? Okay, say it again. Okay, say it again so I can listen. Okay, listen to me say it and make sure that I'm saying it properly. Because you know what?
Oh, yeah.
That's one of the things that we have to nail as play-by-play broadcasters, right? If we don't say someone's name right, we're going to get texts, we're going to get emails, we're going to get phone calls. Mm-hmm. You know, players' families are going to be upset with us because you know what? It's right. Your name. You want people to say it right. And I can completely understand that myself.
Oh, is there a favorite name you have? I feel like my favorite name in the NHL is Bogosian.
it rolls off the tongue nicely. Yeah, I'm trying to think if there are any that jump to mind. You know, I think back to some of the names that I liked as a kid, like Zarly Zalapsky was a defenseman for the Calgary Flames, and that was an amazing name. You know, in terms of current players, nothing is really jumping to mind at the moment, but you know, those names that sound smooth and come off your tongue really nicely are the ones that I like the best.
Do you have a favorite play that you've called or a really memorable game or moment or, you know, or even it could be even a funny play or something like funny happened or even super memorable? Like you were saying, you got to see them win the championship and stuff. But, you know, play or a moment.
Yeah, well, you know, unfortunately, the most memorable games I've called, I called remotely from a studio because the Vancouver Canucks went on a pretty good playoff run to game 7 of the second round last year and lost to the Vegas Golden Knights. And they had some memorable overtime goals. And so those were a lot of fun to call. And it was my first chance to call playoff games in the NHL. You know, because the Canucks haven't been a very good team for the last handful of years since I got the job. So things that jump to mind immediately, Chris Tanev's series clinching overtime winner against the Minnesota Wild in the play-in round for the Canucks. That was a big goal. I also got to call Daniel and Henrik Sedin's last home game for Vancouver. Of course, they've since had their jerseys retired and they combined to score the overtime winner in a packed house in their last home game and the place just erupted. So that's like I get goosebumps thinking about that. That was a pretty special moment to have the call of. And then personally for me, in terms of a career highlight, because things were remote this past year, we actually got the opportunity to call the conference finals and the Stanley Cup final nationally on the Sportsnet radio network across Canada. So, you know, that's something that, you know, as a kid, you dream about having a chance to say, you know, whatever team it is has won the Stanley Cup. And so that was a career highlight for me, getting to call the Lightning winning the Cup this past
year.
Wow.
Incredible.
Like, who was that? Who was the broadcaster? I think he's the radio guy for Tampa who was like, who turned into sort of like a meme for his like excitement. Do you know
Dave
what I'm talking?
Dave Mishkin. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. Like, do you hope to have a moment like that in your career where you're like known for whatever it is, whatever you're like, that's his style, right? And like his enthusiasm is just like coming out of his body, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, what's your style of calling a game?
Yeah, I wouldn't say I get that enthusiastic because that is it's hard to replicate. I think he's very unique in the way he calls the game. I don't know how I'd describe my style, to be honest. I try to be accurate. You know, I try to show excitement for big moments. We try to do as honest a job as we can of describing the game and you know, for people listening that aren't watching, they get a feeling for what might be happening. There are two moments I can think of that make me proud of the work we've done. One was I was talking to a class of broadcasting students here locally in Vancouver, and one of the students said, oh, by the way, I was listening to the game the other night. You called the overtime goal, and I was driving in the car, and I pictured it, and then I got home and watched the highlight, and it was exactly the way that I pictured it. And I was like, okay, well, that's nice praise, because that's exactly what we're trying to do. We're trying to paint a picture so you can visualize Now that I'm doing the post game shows at the moment, we had a caller in the other night who listens to our games from Fort Wayne, Indiana, I believe it is. And he said, I'm blind. And I really love listening to the way you guys call the game because it's the best way that I can take it in because obviously I can't watch it. And that those are the moments where you're like, wow, I'm making, you know, a small difference in someone's life, but nonetheless helping out someone that can't, you know, view hockey and participate in it the same way that the rest of us do. So that's something that sort of tugs at the heartstrings and makes you feel validated for the work that you do.
Absolutely. How would you describe a home Canucks game to those who haven't been able to go to Rogers? Rogers, right?
Yeah, Rogers Arena. Yeah, Rogers Arena. Yeah, well,
you know, not so, with COVID. Like
no, exactly. With times. Fans in the stands, right?
Yeah.
There's an incredibly passionate fan base here in Vancouver, you know, as is the case with any Canadian team and with, you know, the majority of the teams in the United States as well. So, you know, fans get there early. The moment the doors are open, fans are in there. They're getting down next to the glass to have a chance to watch the warm-up. They've got their signs. They've got their jerseys. And then, you know, it builds. It's like a crescendo kind of where it's a slow build from people trickling in the building. And from our vantage point of the broadcast booth, you can sort of see it all develop where people start coming in and then the warm-up starts and the energy builds and then the game starts and they score a goal and the place absolutely erupts. So, you know, for people that don't know Rogers Arena, it's located right in the downtown core of Vancouver, right next to public transit. So if you attend a game as a fan, there's that energy that builds up. You get on the train and everybody else is on the train and you're all wearing your jerseys and you get down to the game and you get into the rink. And so, you know, it's probably not a whole lot different than the experience of going to a game in a lot of places around the National Hockey League, but it's a very passionate fan base. It's a very knowledgeable fan base. And one of the great things about calling Canuck games for me and for us who travel with the team normally is that the Canucks fan base spans across North America. So you go into any building in the NHL and you're seeing Canuck jerseys. And especially when you go into other Canadian buildings, you know, for example, the Toronto Maple Leafs come to Vancouver, half the jerseys in the crowd are Toronto Maple Leafs jerseys. The Canucks go into Toronto, probably at least a quarter to a third of the jerseys in the stands are Canucks fans, and you can hear audible cheers when Vancouver scores on the road in other Canadian markets. And you know what? In Las Vegas, too, because everybody likes a great excuse to go to Vegas. So whenever the Canucks play in Vegas, we always see a good contingent of Vancouver fans there, too. So that's something that's really cool. And, you know, as someone who grew up as a fan of this team locally, I have an understanding of how passionate the fan base is and how much they want the team to succeed. And so it's pretty cool to have the honor and the privilege of calling games.
Definitely. And fun fact, I am certain that the Vancouver Canucks was the first arena that I went to outside of my home arena. So that was pretty cool. But that building, it absolutely roars when they score. So I will say, if you haven't been there, you should go because it's a good time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Talk to us about the team. Give us your thoughts on performance as far as, you know, today, this day. This is going to air a couple days later, but give us your thoughts on how they're doing so far.
Well, they've had a really tough start to the season. And it's kind of upset a lot of people in this market because, as we talked about, they had a great push in the playoffs last year. They went all the way to game 7 of the second round. They were scoreless going into the third period. So they were, you know, a goal away from being in the conference final last year. Certainly there was some changeover in the offseason. They lost their starting goaltender, who very well could have been a Vezina candidate, mm-hmm. Jacob Markstrom. He's signed with the Calgary Flames now. They lost one of their longstanding defensemen, Chris Tanev. He also signed with the Calgary Flames. And then they acquired Tyler Toffoli from the LA Kings at the deadline last year, but weren't able to get him re-signed under the cap too. And so he signed with the Montreal Canadiens. So unfortunately for the Canucks, they've struggled to start the year. And all of the players that left in free agency have played incredibly well against against them. Toffoli set a record for goals by a Montreal Canadian in a season series against the Canucks. And, you know, this is the Montreal Canadiens, the most storied franchise in the history of hockey with all the Stanley Cups they've won. And when the Canucks came back into the league, or came into the league in the 1970s, the Canadiens used to beat up on them regularly. And yet Tyler Toffoli sets this record. So people in Vancouver are not happy about that. So there's a lot of disappointment because there were high expectations for this team. They've got a good young core. Quinn Hughes is an elite defenseman. He's leading the league in points by defenseman right now. Brock Besser is having a tremendous season offensively. Elias Pettersson is one of the bright young stars in the NHL, but they've vastly underperformed to start the year. They went on a 6-game losing streak here in the last couple of weeks, and they find themselves on the outside of the playoff picture. They've played more games than anyone else in the league. They had the busiest schedule to start the year, and they put themselves in a tough spot where they're going to have a lot of ground to make up in order to make the playoffs, which has led for calls here locally for general manager Jim Benning to be fired, for head coach Travis Green to be fired. So it's a season to this point that has gone completely sideways for the Canucks. That said, they have played better hockey in the last handful of games. They just completed a 4-game set against the Calgary Flames with this unique schedule where you play the same team 3 or 4 games in a row, and they managed to get 5 of 8 points from that 4-game set. And overall, they've looked like a much better hockey team. I think one of the big concerns early in the year was that not just that they were losing, but the way they were losing. They looked discombobulated. They couldn't complete a pass out of their own zone to save their life. They were giving up 5 or more goals routinely. And they're not known for being a stalwart defensive team anyway, but they really struggled in that element of the game to start the season. So, you know, in terms of the process, in terms of how they've looked a lot better over the last few games, but they've put themselves in a tough position where they're going to have to get on a run and an extended winning streak at some point here to put themselves back into the playoff picture, because we know that every game is a 4-point game when you're only playing divisional opponents. And, you know, even though it's only been 20 games for them now, or around the 20 game mark, they're already well past the quarter mark of their season and getting closer to the halfway mark. So they have a lot of work to do, and they're going to need to be much better than they have been to this point in order to get anywhere near the playoff bar. And if they don't make the playoffs, it's very possible that some of those changes, as I mentioned, general manager or potentially head coach Travis Green, who's in the last year of his contract, may not be back with the organization next year.
Yeah. What can you give us, like, a pulse of Canada? Like, obviously, I know it's really big, but, like, because of the new divisions and like, what is, like, the general sort of consensus of, like, fans and people watching all the rivalries across, you know, the country? Like, what is that, like, how is that shifted? Or have you seen anything? Or what do you hear when you, the one time you go to the grocery store a week when you're not being self-quarantined? Like, what's this sort of energy and the vibe amongst, like, people and fans across Canada with the this division?
There's an even greater roller coaster of emotions for people as opposed to a normal season. So, you know what, in a regular year, the Canucks win a game and all the callers on our post-game show are, hey, man, they look great. Maybe they've got a chance to go far in the playoffs this year. The Canucks lose a game, it's, man, that guy turned the puck over. They should send him down to the AHL, and they should trade this guy, and they should cut that guy, and why isn't this guy in the lineup? So, like, there is intense passion for this game in this country. And, you know, Vancouver is very much like that. You know, pretty well all the markets in Canada are very much like that. But because they're all rivalry games and they're all divisional games and they're these mini series, that's even heightened to a greater extent. So, you know, the amount of noise we were hearing around fans wanting some of these organizational changes when the Canucks were struggling, it came to a fever pitch. Like, social media, everyone's angry. Call-in shows, everyone's angry. The text messages we get, everyone's angry. And then they've won a few games here, and suddenly we got people calling to the post-game show going, I believe they could do it. They're going to get on a run here. They look really great. They figured it out. Go Canucks. They're going to make it into the playoffs. Right. So, you know, that's sort of the snapshot of Vancouver. And you know, I would imagine it's the same in many markets. You know, the Toronto Maple Leafs lost to the Ottawa Senators just a few nights ago in Ottawa. For people that haven't been following the Canadian division or the North division very closely have really struggled to start the year. You know, they've only won just a handful of games here. They're well behind the other six teams in the division. And they were expected to be one of the bottom teams in the league, but they've been even more disappointing than everyone expected. Well, the Leafs have all these expectations around them because they're right at the top of the division. They've got Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner and all these great players. And people in Toronto are thinking about, hey, we've got a chance to win the Stanley Cup. So when they're leading 5-1 against the Ottawa Senators and they lose 6-5 in overtime, I'm sure there were people in Toronto pulling their hair out. And I'm sure it was a great day the next day to work on sports radio in Toronto, because I would imagine the phone boards would have been absolutely exploding.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure you've heard it all from the fans calling in. And I think it might actually be a good thing that we are still somewhat in a quarantined, like, restricted way of living, especially for everybody in Canada with these rivalries. Like, it's probably better that that's happening right now, because, like you're saying, with all the emotions, you don't want people in Vancouver taking to the streets. We know what happens when they do that. So,
and to that point, you know, talking about Jim Benning, the general manager, and people on social media wanting him to be let go, and our callers and our texters. Well, in the past, the Canucks have had to fire a general manager because the fans started chanting at the game, right? Mike Gillis was the GM of the Canucks. He, you know, oversaw arguably their greatest era in franchise history, where they went to Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals in 2011 and lost to the Boston Bruins. But things weren't going well at the end of his tenure. And it got to the point where at a home game, the whole crowd is chanting, "Fire Gillis." And the Canucks felt at that point, you have to let him go, because it's not fair to him to subject him to that kind of open criticism. And I firmly believe that if there were fans in the stands right now with the way this team has started the season, they would have had to make a change as well, for exactly the same reason. So certainly pandemic economics play into that, where, you know, firing a general manager is a lot different in a season like this, where you don't have money coming in and you're going to have to hire someone else to take over that job. And, you know, interviewing someone for a job like that isn't the way it normally would be, because you're not going to fly someone into your city, especially if they're coming over the border, because there's the mandatory 14-day quarantine to come into Canada. So, you know, I think Jim Benning probably, to a certain extent, owes the fact that he's still on the job to the fact that there aren't fans in the stands right now.
That's gotta be tough. He's probably sitting there shaking in his little space boots. Oh man. So let's talk about your podcast. What can you say about your podcast? What can fans, you know, expect when listening to you? Where can they listen to you?
Yeah, so I host it's a radio show that we also do as a podcast. It's called Hockey Fight, and it's me and my good friend John Cullen. And John is a local stand-up comedian in Vancouver. He's a well-known podcaster. He hosts a social media podcast called Block Party that's very successful and very funny. I highly recommend it for people that are very online all the time, because they get into some really, really good topics. But he and I have been friends for a few years, and we've always wanted to do a show together. So the premise of the show is that, you know, I work in the media, so I'm around the NHL. I've got a unique perspective on things, whereas he's a stand-up comedian and he's a funny guy, but he's also like a rabid emotional fan. And so once a week we get together and we talk about the biggest topics of the NHL, and he brings sort of the crazy fringe fan perspective, and I bring, you know, the media perspective, and we get into a couple of the biggest topics in the NHL every week. It airs in Vancouver on our radio station Sportsnet 650 on Saturdays at 2 p.m. Pacific. The podcast gets uploaded right after that. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts. Just search Hockey Fight, and then you can follow us on Twitter at Hockey Fight Pod. We also do a segment every week on the show where we ask people to write in and tell us their craziest stories from rinks they've been at. So whether it was, you know, an adult rec league game where something funny happened, or, you know, when they were playing as a kid, if a parent did something ridiculous, or whatever it might be. And we feature one of those stories every week on the show. It's called Beer League Bozo Minor League Maroon. So if any of your listeners have any great stories that they think we should read out on the podcast, they can send us an email, hockeyfightpod@gmail.com.
That is so good. Okay, wait, we have to ask. We know we're running out of time, but I wanted to see if you had any good stories about any NHL players, past or present, that you've interviewed or talked to, whether it be just a memorable story, a funny story. Obviously, I know you work for a team, so you have to be cautious of what you say, but and I'm not looking for you to get in trouble, but anything fun or interesting or quirky or a good moment or seeing them do something really kind or anything like that.
Well, in terms of doing things that are really kind, you see that all the time when you're around an NHL team. After
Yeah.
almost every game, a player has a child in the room that may be suffering from an illness or had something happen to them in their life. So NHL players are some of the best people in the world in terms of the way they give back. So I can't think of a specific story of that regard, but there are hundreds, if not thousands, of examples that I can think of. In terms of sort of a funny story, Troy Stecher was a defenseman for the Vancouver Canucks. He just left this past offseason and signed with the Detroit Red Wings. But I have been covering Troy since he was about 17 years old in
Wow.
junior hockey. And that's one of the cool things about coming up through junior hockey. As a broadcaster, you see players come up along with you. And so, Devon Taves, as I mentioned, I knew him when he was 17, 18 years old, and now he's playing in the NHL, and we always get a chance to catch up whenever, he was playing for the Islanders, now he's with the Avalanche. So when things are normal, whenever those teams come through town, I always make sure I go down to the visiting dressing room and say hi to him and have a good chat. But Troy Stecher, so he played for the Penticton Vees, which were the team that the Surrey Eagles beat in the BCHL championship final the year I was doing the play-by-play for them. And he was the best defenseman in the league that year. He was their captain. He was unbelievable. But they lost that year. The year prior, they had actually won the championship. And recently, that team was inducted into the BC Sports Hall of Fame as one of the best teams. They had one of the longest winning streaks that's ever been recorded in junior hockey in Canada. And so a number of people were interviewing him about that team being inducted into the Hall of Fame, the Sports Hall of Fame here in British Columbia. And we're lining up, getting ready for the scrum where we all stand around and ask him questions. And Troy goes, you should be asking Batch about this. He knows everything about this team. He used to cover the BCHL. And I said, yeah, I know a little bit more about the year after when you guys lost in the final. He goes, oh man, that cuts really close. I was playing with a fractured collarbone that year. And that was the first time that I had heard that he was playing hurt through that whole series. And he had had a tremendous series. So we had a good chuckle about that. And, as I said, that's one of the pretty cool things about this is, you meet so many great people in hockey and you come across them, at various different stages. Claude Noel, who was a former NHL coach with the Winnipeg Jets, was our head coach for 1 year with the Vancouver Giants. Well, now he's a scout for the Anaheim Ducks, or sorry, he's a scout for the New Jersey Devils, but he's based in California. So I always see him at the rink in Anaheim, when we're there, calling Canucks Ducks games. So it's pretty cool that we were riding the buses together, in the Western Hockey League, just a few years ago, and now I see him in NHL rinks. And very quickly, a funny story
Yeah.
in that regard as well. The year Claude was the head coach, when there was a road game, he always wanted to get out of there quickly and get home. So, the players would shower as quick as possible. They would pack up all the gear as quick as possible. The problem with that was that as part of our rights agreement with the radio station, I had to do a 45-minute post-game show. So oftentimes, when we were in an away rink, the bus was running, waiting for me to get down there with all my radio gear so we could leave.
Oh, geez.
And there was one night where they had lost really badly, and he was in an awfully sour mood. And I got on the bus, and he says, "Yeah, I don't think you're going to be doing those long post-game shows anymore." And I said, "Well, you know what? Honestly, if you can get the length of the post-game show cut down so we can leave early, that's fine. You can talk to ownership or whatever." And he said, "No offense, but you're probably not Vin Scully." And again, we're like he's joking. He's
Of course.
lighthearted about it, but he was also frustrated in the moment because the team hadn't played very well and he wanted to get going. And so
That's good.
sort of something that I thought to myself a few years later is, you know what? Yeah, I'm not Vin Scully, but I'm calling games in the NHL now. So that's close enough for me.
Yeah. That's good.
We ask every guest the final three questions, regardless of who you are. This might be a little hard for you to answer, but answer the best you possibly can.
Okay.
Who is your favorite hockey hunk?
Ooh, that is a hard one. I'm going to go with Braden Holtby. He's former Washington Capital, Vezina Trophy winner, Stanley Cup champion, now plays for the Canucks, and he's got a lot of publicity in this market because he plays the guitar, he has pet tortoises. He seems like a really interesting guy, and yeah, he's not too bad looking either.
Not at all. And who is your favorite hockey lady?
Ooh. I don't know the answer to that question. That's a good one.
It's okay.
Let me think.
Could be a player, it could be a player's wife, girlfriend, coach.
Well, I'll take it in a different direction. I know where you're going, but someone I really respect who's really good in the media and has done a lot of good for hockey is Cassie Campbell up here in Canada. Former Canadian national team player, and she works on Hockey Night in Canada now and does an absolutely spectacular job at analysis. So she's someone that, when she's on the panel and I'm watching a game, I always learn something about the way she analyzes the game. So I have a ton of respect for her, and she's one of the nicest people you'll meet in hockey as well.
Love it. Gotta love it. And our last question is, do you have a Sidney Crosby story?
Yeah, I do actually. I've got a really funny Sidney Crosby story.
Yes.
Ooh.
Do you have time to tell it?
I do, absolutely.
Okay.
So, before I worked in media, I was a broadcast student in 2010 when the Olympics were here in Vancouver. And because we were all broadcast students, we were hired to work for Olympic Broadcast Services. And I was lucky enough to work in the rink in Vancouver for the entirety of the Olympics. I was essentially, my role was to run players through the mix zone, they call it. So the way interviews work at the Olympics, because there's so many media outlets from all over the world that want to talk to athletes, is the players come off the ice in hockey, or they come off the slope in skiing or whatever it might be. And they're taken through an area that's kind of like a runway where they walk past all this media. And each media outlet is designated a spot on the runway, and the players go past them. And, the biggest heavy hitters like NBC was always first. And, the Canadian outlets got a prime spot because it's the Winter Olympics and hockey in Canada. But then there's, Swedish media and media from all over the world down the line. And so the players are required to walk through this area. And our job was to talk to all the media beforehand, find out who they wanted to interview after the game, and then try and set them up with the player that they wanted, which
It's hard
was
to do.
challenging. Well, it
It's
was chat.
very hard to do on any sort of like red carpet because
Yeah.
it's, yeah.
It is a lot like a red carpet. That's a very good way to describe it. And the players were not obligated to stop for anyone. So there were some players after a tough loss, they're firing past everyone. And so that's, we would always say to the media, like, I'll do my best to get this player for you, but if he doesn't want to talk to you, I can't make him talk to you. Well, Sidney Crosby was tremendous during the Olympics. He stopped and talked to absolutely everyone. He was incredibly gracious, and that was such a cool moment because, again, I'm still a broadcasting student at that point, and here I am bossing Sidney Crosby around and going, go talk to NBC, go talk to TSN. But he was tremendous through all of it, and still one of the most memorable moments for me in hockey. I was standing right behind the net when he scored the golden goal on Ryan Miller for Team Canada, which I know might sting for some American listeners, but it's one of the top moments for me in terms of being in and around hockey. And Sid, he still stands out to me as one of the most gracious guys, which, having, interviewed him a few times since then, you understand that he gets the media side of things and is really good about that. But it just struck me how he scores the gold medal winning goal. All of his teammates are in the dressing room wanting to celebrate with him, and he's still doing interviews with outlets from all sorts of countries around the world. It just speaks to the kind of guy he is.
Yeah, and he's answering the exact same question
Like 30 times,
30
probably.
times.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
That's a great story. We're supporters of Sidney Crosby here, so we only have heard amazing stories along these lines, and so now it's just become one of our final questions. So
Yeah.
tell everybody where they can listen to you again one more time, the radio and the podcast show that's also radio. So just
Yeah,
remind
so
everybody.
I call Vancouver Canuck games on Sportsnet 650. You can listen to those games if you're not in the Vancouver area through the NHL app or however you listen to games. And we call all those games. And right now I'm doing intermissions and post-game show because I'm quarantined. So call into the post-game show. Why not? And give your take on the Canucks. Again, the show is Hockey Fight. It airs Saturdays at 2 p.m. Pacific on Sportsnet 650 Radio in Vancouver. And you can download the podcast anywhere you get your podcasts. We usually post it later on Saturday afternoon, so you can get it for Sunday or for your Monday morning commute. And yeah, just search Hockey Fight wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Hockey Fight Pod, or write us your crazy stories from the rink, hockeyfightpod@gmail.com.
Thanks for coming over to our House of Hockey podcast and hanging out with us. We'll be back next week with a brand new episode. And in the meantime, you can follow us on social media. Just look for House of Hockey Podcast. We'll be back next week.